Hello, folks. What's a crack? Welcome to Best of Belfast, the podcast that usually celebrates Northern Ireland and the incredible people in it. Got a bit of a funny one for you today. Is it a teaser? Is it a trailer? It might be a shout out. Not entirely sure what it is, but it is a full hour-ish long episode of a brand new podcast that myself and a previous guest on the podcast, Dr. Steve Ilardi, have just launched. So brand new independent show. We're launching it out on Spotify and it is called Mental Health. Kind of crazy that no one had invented or published a podcast called Mental Health yet, but hey, we're not complaining. And basically, for those of you who maybe haven't been listening to the show for a while or you missed that episode, we did a series on depression last January, and Dr. Steve Ilardi is one of the leading experts on depression worldwide. He has a fantastic best-selling book called The Depression Cure, and it turned out to be one of our most popular episodes in terms of listens, but more importantly, one of our most successful episodes in terms of people reaching out and saying, yo, this episode made a big difference in my life. Thank you so much for creating a platform for Steve and for a lot of the great research that he's been involved in over the course of his life. Him and I have struck up this really interesting friendship. We've been good buddies for the last 2 years or so since I reached out to him after reading his book to thank him. One thing led to another. We did a podcast episode together and now here we are launching our own show together. So it's kind of pretty simple. You know, Steve's in his 50s. He's from Kansas in the United States. I'm obviously mid-20s from Northern Ireland. And each of us have very different perspectives. We bring different life experiences to the table. I know I've been very open about my own journey with mental health, specifically depression, from a young age on this show before, and it's something that we try to talk about quite a lot. And I basically just wanted to pursue that passion even further of trying to spread the good news connected to mental health, some of the tools and the research and the things that we can have in our tool belt to basically give us better mental health wherever we are on that journey and whatever specific spectrum we find ourselves on. And so the episode you're about to hear is all about the surprising link between COVID and depression. It's not something that I knew about until I actually had COVID and hopped on the phone with Dr. Steve, and he's able to download all this incredible information to me. And so we decided to do a four-part series around the pandemic. That's what we're launching the new show with. And so if you are a fan of anything we've done in the past about mental health, how many times can you say mental health? Mental health, mental health, mental health. If you've enjoyed any of the mental health content we've put out before on this platform on Best of Belfast, I would highly encourage you to go and check out the new show. It's available where all fine podcasts are available. And we would really appreciate you giving us a little subscribe. And if you're feeling like unbelievable, a wee review as well would be lovely. Also, last thing I will say is that you will hear me refer to myself in this episode as Hugh James. Steve will also refer to me as Hugh. So you're kind of like, what the heck is going on there? That's a bigger conversation for another time. But the long and short of it is I am thinking about and really considering using some sort of like a pseudonym or a pen name going forward for the books that I publish, for the content that I produce online to protect my own privacy and the kind of privacy of my own family as well. And because this new show will most likely reach a global audience and potentially quite a big audience, and because I'll be sharing some sensitive kind of information about myself, I just wanted to create that little bit of space between my personal life and my professional life as well. So there you go. That's a lot for one intro. Really appreciate you being here. Hope the new year's off to a good start. And please welcome back to your ears the wonderful, endearing, absolute genius, Dr. Steve Ilardi. So let me ask you this, because like, as you said, like I've had COVID and I know for a fact you've probably done a deep dive on the topic, but like something that I just still can't wrap my head around is why did I lose my sense of smell and my sense of taste when I had COVID?
Yeah. Okay. So when I first learned that people were losing their sense of smell with COVID, I got really alarmed because the nerve cells in the sinus passage that give us our sense of smell, that they end in a point called the olfactory bulb.
Right.
They have a broadband connection straight into the center of the brain. And the microbes that know how to hack into the olfactory bulb generally travel right into the brain, and it's not good. And I thought, oh no, you know, that is what COVID is doing. And we have just in the last couple of months gotten definitive evidence that that is not what COVID is doing. Thank God.
Yeah, because that's the scary thing. Like, so I can wrap my head around like, okay, I have a runny nose or I have like a cough, because it's like these are cold and flu type stuff. But take away my sense of smell and I'm like, bro, you've crossed the line. Like there is something weird happening in my brain that I don't understand.
Yeah, and it turns out it's not happening in your brain.
Huh.
So here's the deal. Yeah. All right, I'm going to give an analogy. I hope it's helpful.
Let's go.
Okay, so nerve cells are like these high-performance race cars. They're fast, they're impressive as hell, but they're high maintenance. And so they, just like a race car, they've got to have a pit crew. They've got to have a crew of support staff that keep them in peak condition. And in the brain, we call these glial cells, things like astrocytes, they are support cells. And we have five of them at least for every single brain cell, for every neuron, for every nerve cell.
My goodness.
Same thing with the olfactory bulb, the smelling neurons in the sinus cavity. They have support staff around, other cells. And it's those support cells that get obliterated by COVID. COVID knows how to hack into those cells, takes them offline. And so all the inflammation, all of the distress of those cells being hit, that's what takes your sense of smell away.
So the race car doesn't get blown up. The pit crew just get like put to sleep or something?
Well, no, some of the pit crew, I'm afraid, are no longer with us.
Oh, no, my pit crew. Why did you have to tell me that?
Yeah, the good news is that the replacements are on the way. In fact, you got your sense of smell back, yeah?
Yeah, so I lost my sense of smell maybe like, I don't know, day five of after the positive test, and I had it back like maybe 2 weeks later, maybe 10 days later. I'm really grateful because I know like awesome. Friends and family who like, you know, 9 months later and they're still, I don't know how much of it is like placebo, but they're like, you know, like stew just doesn't taste the same, or just tea doesn't taste the way it used to anymore.
Yeah, no, that's real. So here's the thing. Typically, the outcome is like yours, where it's like, okay, the pit crew might have gotten taken out, but the car is still, it's fine. It might take a few weeks to get it roadworthy again, but it's going to be all right. But occasionally, yeah, there's collateral damage, and the nerve cells can be affected indirectly because they don't have enough support, and so they can get starved, they can get hurt by the collateral inflammation, and some of them can die locally, but they will eventually get back online enough. And the brain will also, if the input changes from those cells, if there's permanent damage, the brain will upgrade its software over time to compensate for the change in input, to compensate for the fact that you know, there's a little less signal coming in.
Wow.
And so over time, usually people will feel like they're back to where they were before.
That's so crazy. I mean, this is why I love talking to you, because all the brain stuff is not my forte, though I am fascinated by it. And I remember calling you, and I guess that's why we're having this conversation today. I remember giving you a call when I had COVID, and I was like, surprise. And you were like, okay, stay alive, like be safe, bro. But you give me a very, very helpful and real honest kind of like friendly piece of advice, where you were like, just so you know, like, you know my history, you know my story, you know the journey I've been on. And you just said, I'm going to be straight up with you, dude. Like, you are more at risk after having a COVID infection of having a depressive episode. And you threw some amazing stat my way. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you're like 40% more likely to have a depressive episode after you have had COVID. I'm sure you can fact check me on that. But that blew my mind. And that has kind of heightened my curiosity of wow, like what does COVID do to the brain and how is it different from kind of like a regular cold and flu? And that is a piece of advice that I've passed on to all my friends and family members who have now had COVID since. And all of them have responded in the same way. They're like, huh, thanks for the heads up. I'll keep an eye out and just make sure that I'm taking care of my mental health while also my physical health.
Yeah, it's incredible. So what I did not tell you, because I didn't want to alarm you, is we have pretty good evidence now. There was a phenomenal study published several months ago that roughly half of everyone with COVID will have at least some symptoms of depression over the first month or two. Yeah, about 50%. And get this, you know, that 40% increased risk figure, there was a landmark study published earlier this year. They looked at 70 million Americans with digitized health records. About 70,000 of them had documented COVID. What they found was their risk of depression over the next 3 months practically doubled.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we're talking about first episode. That's, you know, somebody with no prior history of depression. That risk doubled compared to other control patients that had other kinds of infections. Like maybe they had the flu or maybe they had an ear infection.
Yeah.
And this is even more, I think, concerning. People that have had depression previously are at even greater risk of a recurrence when they have COVID. And so there's a really important thing that I think is completely flying under the radar, not only of most people out in the lay public, but also most doctors, most clinicians are not thinking in terms of, wait a minute, COVID is affecting the brain in some really important ways. Thank God it is not actually infecting the brain directly, at least not the nerve cells, but it is decimating the road crew for the brain, all of the support staff, those glial cells, those astrocytes that are there to make sure our neurons are functioning properly, they are getting hit really hard by this virus. And as a result, the brain is not functioning nearly at its peak capacity while we're battling the infection, and sometimes for a few months afterwards.
That is so crazy. I mean, and I can't wait to kind of unpack and get into why some of that stuff is happening and how much is kind of like to do with peripheral issues. Like, you know, is it the fact that people are away from sunlight or is it because people are spending more time in bed? Like, so we'll kind of get into the weeds of that. But before we do, we should probably jump in and just like say hello to the people listening.
What? Did we make it this far? Hugh, you're falling down on the job, man.
I know. I get so wrapped up in the rabbit hole and in the first kind of like little opening bit that I'm like, yeah, okay, no. It's been like X amount of minutes. It's time to actually do the intro. So if you've just jumped in, hello and welcome to our first ever episode of a new podcast, a new experimental show that we are launching here. This is the pilot episode. Welcome to making it here first before it was cool and before your friends heard about it. But this is the show called Mental Health, where we discuss the latest tools, practices, and cutting edge research to help you take back control of your emotional well-being. My name is Hugh James. I'm a podcaster from Northern Ireland that has been on a journey towards healing from addiction and depression over the last 15 years.
And I'm Steve Ilardi. I'm a clinical neuroscientist and a professor of psychology, but mostly I'm a fellow traveler with you and with you. Yeah, that was not at all dad humor. So I don't know if you can tell just from our voices, but I'm the older guy in this pairing. Hugh is a wunderkind. He contacted me out of the blue, and it was very flattering. I'm an author. He had read a book that I wrote on depression, and it was an incredible moment to open his email and just to hear him pour his heart out about how that content had really helped change his life. So I wrote him back, and one thing led to another, and I went on his podcast, and we've become friends. And
dude, the way I describe it is, I like in Lord of the Rings terminology, which is like how I see the world, I'm like, it was like meeting Gandalf, like opening this book with like, here are the weapons and the tools that you've been lacking while going against all of these like trolls your life. You know what I mean? So yeah, super cool.
That's awesome. Well, what you're going to discover as you hear the two of us in conversation is that we bring a lot of different things to the table. We have such different stories. I'm the American, he's the Irishman, I'm the scientist, he's the poet. But we're really, I think we're kindred spirits, and we both share a passion for battling mental illness, for giving people a sense of hope, for giving people a sense of encouragement and inspiration. And that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. Totally. So we're really excited about this.
Yeah, look, we're just, you know, a lonely fellowship of two right now, looking to expand our pack and find other hobbits for the journey that we want to go on, ultimately towards, you know, more freedom and more well-being for ourselves, for the people that we love in our own lives and the tight circles that we kind of keep, but then also for society in general as well. And, you know, we really hope that this podcast is kind of a little extra tool on your tool belt that you can use in your own life and also in the lives of your friends and your family and the people that you call your community as well. So we've already kind of mentioned it. Today's episode is all about the surprising link between COVID and depression, which, as I've already said, is something that I only started to scratch the surface on through Steve whenever I actually had COVID myself a couple of months ago. And we're going to dive into a lot of different stuff today. We're going to talk about what we can do to keep ourselves safe, what you can do to keep the people around you safe, and also just talk about how this is a pretty common side effect of the virus that we haven't heard a lot of other people talk about so far. So, Steve, if we kind of like pick up where we left off, one of the weirdest experiences I had of the COVID infection was, and I'm not really sure how I can articulate this, but hopefully you can pick up where I'm coming from. The way I've described it to people is it was like being depressed without feeling sad, right? So that sounds like maybe a bit crazy, but what I mean is like I was super fatigued. I was really tired. I could feel the inflammation in my body. Like I could feel that kind of like lethargy that so often comes with depression. I had the inability to taste my food. So I didn't have pleasure from everyday experiences, which is also a telltale sign of depression. And it was actually a really liberating part of my own journey because I'm like, wow, like so much of depression is actually a physical experience and not just a mystical, spiritual, emotional sort of thing. So Absolutely. Speak to me a little bit about that as a jumping off point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so something you and I have talked about before is the word depression can be really misleading for people because we use it in everyday conversation. I mean, a lot of people do, to talk more about a feeling of sadness, more about an emotional state, right? It's like, oh, I'm feeling depressed because fill in the blank, something upsetting happened.
I didn't get my pumpkin spice latte in the trivial sense of the term.
Yes, as one does. So that is not what we mean in the mental health world. When we talk about depression, it's a shorthand really for a devastating illness that, as you said, it affects the entire body. It affects the brain. In our diagnostic Bible, we call the DSM-5, we call it major depressive disorder, and it shuts down the body. It basically gives the brain a signal that we are desperately ill. And the brain says, oh, I know how to deal with illness. We're just going to basically shut down, give a signal to pull away from everyone, crawl into a hole somewhere, lick our wounds and recover. But wait, there's more. The part of the brain that registers physical pain also gets lit up. And that crosswires with parts of the brain that register emotional pain. And so there is that element of sadness. There is that element of emotional suffering. And so when the person is clinically depressed, not only are they feeling no energy, not only are they feeling mentally foggy, not only are they feeling a lack of sex drive and a lack of pleasure, but they're also feeling just really negative. They're feeling sad, but they're also looking at the world, looking at life, looking at themselves through a very dark lens where everything just takes on a negativistic cast. And that's the brain on depression. It's very physical, but it's also very mental.
That is the paradox of depression, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And by the way, I just want to mention that I really believe that one of the reasons you were able to experience when you got COVID and you experienced the more, what we would call in the business, the more somatic physical symptoms.
Ooh, I like that word.
The somatic manifestations of depression, you did not have a full episode. Why? Because you've radically changed how you live. You have so many protective features in place, both physically and psychologically, that you were prepared for this thing. It hit you, hit your body, but it didn't tip you over as it does for so many people, tip you over into full-blown depressive illness. Why? Because you didn't allow it to spiral into that cascade of emotional suffering and of the cascade of negative ruminative thoughts, the oh my God, the catastrophic sorts of thoughts about where is this going? What does it all mean? This is awful. And that protected you, and it allowed you to be so resilient that you bounced back very quickly.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of the, and you know, this is, it's difficult to say things like this, but it was one of the beauties of having walked through quite a long journey with depression is the fact that you have these amazing kind of tools at your resources, like I said at the top of the show, and you have just an ability to know yourself, and you know the difference between the physical and the emotional. Whereas when I was younger, you know, my first depressive episode was when I was 11. You know, I probably spent the next 10 years after that associating every physical symptom with also being emotionally in turmoil over those physical symptoms. And
exactly,
there's a lot of really interesting stuff. You know, obviously I'm preaching to the choir here with you around like acceptance and commitment therapy and the ability to like be okay with not feeling okay. And a big breakthrough in my own mental health was distinguishing the difference between are you physically feeling unwell or are you emotionally feeling unwell, and having the clarity between the two, I think, is what has helped me kind of dodge the depression bullet of COVID. Whereas some of my friends and family members who have not experienced depression before, it's hit them a lot harder because they don't maybe have that clarity, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, I think that's brilliant. And, you know, I really want to speak to you, dear listener, if you have had COVID and have experienced a full-blown episode of depression, you're not alone. That's an extremely common thing. And it's so easy to blame oneself. You might be hearing Hugh talk and say, oh God, I'm just somebody who's out here doing the best I can. And this thing hit me like a ton of bricks. And now I think I might be depressed. I am suffering.
Yeah. And I love kind of the compassion that you used there to kind of, and this has been so helpful for myself, even with depression itself, the fact that it's never or it's rarely just one thing. You know, I think there's kind of this attitude, culturally speaking, where it's like, let's say there's been a death in the family or even something more minor where it's like, let's say my dog has died. And I feel depressed because my dog has died. There are definitely situations where that's the case. But, you know, with something like a depressive episode after COVID, it's coming at you from lots of different directions. Like your inflamed brain is playing a role. Your isolation is playing a role. Your inability to exercise is playing a role. Your inability to go out into your community and be part of your everyday stuff that keeps you healthy and well and happy, that also has been taken away from you. So I guess that's also the vulnerability that people face post-COVID or during COVID to have a depressive episode as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now you can tell I'm a rookie at this, Hugh, because I'm going to back up a second. What the hell am I thinking? I need to tell you that COVID causes inflammation, which is a type of immune response and a healing response when the body has been injured.
So this is great. You're actually not a rookie. You're a pro because you literally just, you're calling yourself back in the best way possible. One of the things I wanted to talk about was what the heck is the inflammation response? What's going on with COVID and what's the connection here between that and depression?
Yeah. So inflammation, again, it's the body's way of ramping up its activity to deal with injury, to deal with infection, with threats, with anything that's gone wrong. And here's the deal. Inflammation is a two-edged sword, because while it's super important to restore the balance, to restore well-being in the long term, it can kind of mess with things in the short term. So I'll give you an example. So Hugh, have you ever had a sprained ankle? You ever turned your ankle?
Dude, I'll give you one even better. So I just broke my nose. Yeah. The doctor refused to, like, it's so wonky. Like, well, obviously it's my nose, so I notice it like more than anyone else. And my wife, actually, she is very aware of the wonkiness. But I went to the doctor, and the doctor's like, bro, I can't break this for you because the swelling's too, there's too much swelling going on. And I was like, ah, swelling. Like, if only you weren't there, then I could have had a brie broken sooner. But so often your body's natural response is a way to protect itself from like future elbows to the nose, as it was in my case, can also kind of get in the way of some other things. So yes, I'm well aware of the natural limitations, I guess you could say.
And by the way, I apologize for laughing at your broken nose, but you sent me such a hilarious picture. And Matt is a genuinely handsome young man.
Oh,
but
yeah.
This picture,
bring it on. Face for radio, let's do it.
but he, this picture of the broken nose was it was both alarming and also kind of hilarious.
I'll put it to you like this, not to completely derail the conversation. Like, I was on holiday in the south of Ireland there last week, and I got my hair cut while I was there, and the guy asked me where I was from, and I was like, yeah, I'm from Belfast. And he goes, oh, and he saw the black eye, because I didn't send you the black eye, I've got a great photo to send you after this. I had a really black eye that kind of came a few days after, and he asked me if I was a boxer, and I was like, yeah. Like, I am not a tough guy, I'm not a hard lad. I'm not, like, for the last week I've been walking around like, yeah, you better not mess with me, dog.
Dude, you have a look of a legit street fighter.
Yeah.
I would not mess with that guy.
Yeah.
But hey, can you put a photo in the show notes?
Yeah, if you go
to, I don't know if you can.
If you go to the webpage connected to this episode, you will see a photo of my broken nose. And the website, we'll mention at the end, it's mentalhealth.fm. And if you just go to episode one, yeah, you can see my beautiful, wonky, street-fighting nose for all of its glory.
Okay, so where were... Oh, yeah. So, all right, I'm going to go back to my original... I've never taken a hit to the face quite that devastating, knock on wood here. But I have turned many an ankle on the basketball court. And, so here's what you see. When you sprain your ankle, before the inflammation sets in, you get this initial stab of pain. But then you're like, oh, you know what? Actually, I can keep playing.
Yeah, put me in, coach. Like, I can keep playing. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, also the endorphins help, right? But our natural opiate painkillers that kick in. But still, before it gets swollen, which is part of the inflammatory response, we can still function pretty well. The inflammation comes in because that's the part where the body's like, okay, look, we got a whole bunch of repair work going on. And just like, you know, when they're doing the facade on a building, they put all the scaffolding up and it looks really ugly and it's bulky and cumbersome, but it's like, okay, well, once we finish with all this, we'll take the scaffolding down, it's going to be great. That's kind of what it's like with inflammation. It's like all this extra stuff is there and nothing works very well while it's inflamed, but you got to have it. It's the price you pay for getting better. So here's the deal. When we have COVID, the body is getting inflamed, and very often the brain is getting inflamed, and the inflamed brain is not a happy brain. The inflamed brain, you know, so many people with COVID feel like they're just kind of like moving through molasses. They feel really brain foggy and their thinking is slow and not clear because the brain is inflamed. The circuits are not humming. They're not firing on all cylinders. And so, it can be pretty alarming. It can be pretty disorienting. It in some cases can be pretty devastating. And that's really I think the crux of the matter for many people who find themselves not just with this physical infection and with all the psychological consequences you've talked about, with the worry, with the fear, with the feeling of maybe guilt Or shame, embarrassment. I've got this illness. You know, did I do something stupid? Was I reckless? Was I foolish? Am I just unlucky? The isolation, the rumination. It's a lot to deal with. And then on top of all of that, to have the brain's own inflammatory response taking us away from our A game in life, even mentally, that's a lot for a lot of people. And so I think part of what you and I have had on our hearts today is just to validate for every listener, this, you're not alone. This is part of the syndrome for many people, but it's not forever. And we really want to equip people to be able to get through this intact, to have hope that there is the other side of this thing. And a lot of that inflammatory scaffolding, again, it's there for a reason. And once the scaffolding is taken down, then there's the discovery that it's played a role in healing.
What if we start to kind of talk about, like, what can people actually do? Okay. So we've talked about the inflammatory response. And interestingly, like, as kind of like a throwaway comment, like, Steve actually was talking to me how, like, there's other infections that can kind of trigger the same thing. So I had a thing called mono, I think you guys call it in the States, when I was 11. We call it glandular fever over here, I'm pretty sure. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to use that. Yeah. Glandular fever.
Yeah, it's the indie way to say it. You know, it's if the real ones use the term glandular fever, mono is for like basic average people.
Yeah.
You know, my first depressive episode was off the back of a pretty severe mono episode of like 6 months. And I've seen other situations where people have had like a big infection and they'll be diagnosed with something like post-viral fatigue, which I'm not even necessarily sure how that ties into everything we talked about today.
Oh, ties in greatly. Yeah.
But it looks and smells and feels like depression. Like, I was even talking to my dad about this the other day. He was talking about when he was a teenager, like, he had like a big infection of something and he was diagnosed with quote unquote post-viral fatigue. And part of me was like, dude, like, I just think you had depression. He goes, yeah, me too. But like, we just didn't have the language for that sort of stuff then. So before we go into action steps and stuff, talk to me about something that in my eyes seems hard for me to wrap my head around. It seems like a bit of a mythical term, like long COVID. So like, what is happening with long COVID in terms of the context of what we've talked about today?
Absolutely. Well, so the first thing to say about long COVID is the science is still pretty young. We know a lot, but there's more that we're going to learn over the next year or so. What we know so far is that long COVID, if we define it as persistent symptoms that last at least 3 months beyond the original infection, and you know, sometimes we're now seeing a year or more, that it's not as common as we feared originally. There were some really early reports that like, holy crap, this could be like 1 out of 4 people or something that get infected. And now with much better methodology, much more careful controls, it looks like it's probably only 5 to 10%. That's still a lot. That's still millions of people. Who are they? They probably fall into 2 or 3 different categories. One, and I think the most obvious, are people that had a very severe infection initially, and their body has not been able to fully clear the virus. So in other words, the immune system, even once it ramps up, and the immune system has like 4 major tricks up its sleeve that come online at various timescales. But even after they're all online, the virus, it's just not enough to clear the virus. And so it's still lurking and it's still causing inflammation. Now, there's another subset of people with long COVID. They don't have the virus in their body anymore, but their immune system is just still freaked out. Their immune system is like, you know, a post-traumatic stress disorder patient where it's just traumatized. And because of the dysregulation that the virus caused, it's still sending out all these inflammatory messengers that cross into the brain and, you know, basically push the brain in a very shutdown sort of mode, illness mode. And we're probably going to learn that that's even the larger class of individuals with long COVID. And remember, inflammation is going to give us basically a chronic fatigue syndrome. And the other thing, and I think this is very poorly appreciated by people, but inflammation can also crank up the brain's runaway stress response. And that can interfere with our sleep, that can cause us to feel anxious, and over time, it can cause us to shut down into an episode of clinical depression.
That is so crazy. If we start to kind of like land the plane and think about what are kind of some of the takeaways that we can think about and sort of implement when it comes to depression and COVID. So the first thing I'll kind of throw out, and maybe we can even just kind of go tit for tat here. Like, I think it's really good now with the knowledge that we have, the knowledge that you gave to me of just the fact that like, hey, if you get COVID, you're more vulnerable to a depressive episode. Like that knowledge in itself, I think is like super powerful. So immediately the first place my brain goes to is like, okay, now we can create like a little bit of like an action plan, or like, this is what we can do if slash when that happens. And my best mate, who's actually also called Steve, he just got COVID last week. And we had a quick phone call, literally just running through some of the stuff where it's like, look, here's some of the things that work for me. Here's some of the ways you can take care of your mental health alongside your physical health. So like the first thing I'll throw out there is if you are on any sort of like supplement regimen, and my current, like my essentials, like things I cannot miss is omega-3 and vitamin D. I just encourage people to like just keep doing that. And just, it's so easy whenever you're not in your routine, you know, you're not going out to work, to kind of skip those things. Like try to maintain as much as your current well-being practice as possible, obviously within reason, during your moment of infection, to kind of give you as much support and scaffolding or foundation as possible going through the infection and the weeks after.
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, another piece that we might add to that, Hugh, is for people that have had a previous or maybe an ongoing battle with any form of psychological distress or suffering. So it could be clinical depression, it could be clinical anxiety, it could be addiction, it could be an eating disorder, it could be any number of other conditions that we'll be talking about over the months ahead. It's important not to let COVID interfere with any existing or ongoing treatment, and that could be psychotherapeutic. The whole world, pretty much, of psychotherapists have pivoted to, at least in part, a teletherapy, telehealth, telemedicine.
Dude, I exclusively kind of see my therapist now remotely, you know, like 100% is actually, brilliant. And I don't even do video, I actually just do audio now because that's what works for me. Like I usually go out for a walk or go for a drive. And I was able to just keep that up even when I had COVID. So great point.
Yeah, I'm seeing a patient right now who lives quite a ways away. And we've discovered that just telephone voice only for him is the most comfortable format.
That's cool that you guys arrived there as well. There you go.
And it's something I've experimented with with different patients over about 30 years of practice. And you know, it's... Okay, so we're going to take a deep dive on this issue some other time, but personalized medicine is a thing that exists. It is the future. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. And not only does that apply to medication, not only does it apply to supplements, not only does it apply to psychotherapy technique, we're finding now it even applies to the mode of delivery of treatment. Should it be in person? Should it be on a screen? Should it be just on a phone? So there, you know, I would just say in general, those of us who have the intellectual curiosity, the nimbleness to actually think about how can we fine tune this particular intervention for this particular individual, we're just going to get so much better outcomes. So absolutely. If somebody is already in treatment, I would say job one, stay in treatment. If somebody has been in treatment and is not in treatment right now, maybe you've been doing really well and now you've had COVID, or you get COVID next month or 3 months from now, and you feel like now you're teetering on the brink of the reemergence of symptoms that you battled in the past, it does not have to be a catastrophe. While we are healthy, that's the time to be proactive. That's the time, how about this, to put in place a set of protective habits that will sustain our well-being. There's always, you know, I would say probably for all of us, there's room for improvement, for stepping up our game, but more importantly, for making us, if I can use this very American metaphor, bulletproof when it comes to some of the threats that might possibly be in the future, and COVID, of course, being one of them. So what does that mean? Well, how about if we build habits of healthy sleep? How about if we build habits of healthy diet that will give our brain the right fuel to thrive? How about if we build robust networks of connection and belonging, build routines of physical activity that will give our brain and our bodies the level of, you know, pretty vigorous activity that we're designed to have? Get out in natural sunlight on a regular basis to keep our body clock, our circadian rhythms, really tightly well entrained, not only with our sleep, but with the rhythms of our hormones. And then finally, and you mentioned this obliquely earlier, habits of mind where we notice what we're noticing, where we notice if we're getting into one of those really toxic downward spirals of negative thinking and rumination, where we notice if we're getting really dark, really bleak, and we have a set of tools to interrupt it. And I'm really excited about spending the next many, many episodes unpacking lots of these things, not all at once, but each in its own time. And I think in the next few episodes, as they pertain specifically to the challenge of the pandemic.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we mentioned basketball. When I had COVID, I obviously wasn't out playing basketball, and I was unable to go to the gym and unable to go for a run and things like that. But I tried as much as possible to kind of maintain that exercise regime, because I know how important it is for my own mental well-being. And like, you know, my studio here in Belfast, it's in an amazing tech hub, like a co-working space filled with, you know, 100 different startups that are coming out of Northern Ireland. And a lot of the companies in here have adopted kind of like the Silicon Valley mantra of done is better than perfect. And I think like whenever it came to my own kind of exercise regime when I had COVID, that's kind of what it was. It was like done is better than perfect. And like the days where I felt good, I definitely made an effort to kind of like do what I could in the house, even if it is simple, like up and down the stairs a few times or push-ups and pull-ups. On the days where I was really, really kind of like feeling physically weak and sick, I just did like the most basic of basic yoga routines. I mean, like I think yoga is probably too strong a word to use for what I was doing, but it was like a 20-minute stretch thing that I found a video and I just kind of followed along. But that in itself was a way to pass time. It was a way to fill the day. It was a way to feel connected with my body. It was a way to actually feel and experience what was going on. And I still got the feel good kind of rush of doing some form of exercise. So obviously don't push yourself, don't exert yourself, but you can still incorporate movement into your day in some sort of a way, as opposed to just go into full kind of, as you would say, couch potato mode. What else would you kind of recommend for people to have in like a bit of an action plan?
I think probably most of you have heard about tryptophan, which is...
Sorry, I'm laughing. The turkey, the great turkey, yeah. Thanksgiving tryptophan.
there's a lot of mythology around. So, okay. So it's like a
part of protein, right? It's like a type, or like, is it an amino acid or something? Like what is it?
Yeah. So proteins are made out of building blocks. Okay. Think of them, you know, almost like, I don't know. Well, never mind. I was going to use a Lego metaphor.
I heard your brain clock into like, yeah. Which of these 50 metaphors am I going to use?
Okay. Fine. It's a little bit like Legos. They get built into proteins that are more like the machines that run our whole body.
Okay.
So we need tryptophan. And one of the things that's made out of tryptophan are really important brain chemicals like serotonin and like melatonin, which of course plays a really important role in sleep onset. So serotonin has hugely important roles in keeping our stress circuits from overheating, keeping the stress response, the fight or flight response, from spiraling out of control. And a really important role, this is going to surprise probably a lot of folks, really important role in giving us a desire to connect with other people.
Wow.
Yeah. Affiliative drive, social drive, the drive to be around the people that we care about or just to be around people in general. There are circuits in the brain that use serotonin that give us that craving of connection. And so here's the most bizarre thing I've learned about COVID so far, is it interferes with our ability to extract tryptophan from our diet.
Bro.
And where do we get tryptophan? Well, turkey, yeah, sure. But basically any good protein source, so any meat, dairy, eggs, soy, tofu, nuts, beans. I mean, they're all sources of at least some tryptophan. Most meat, dairy products have a tremendous amount. But when we are battling COVID and even in the aftermath, our bodies can't absorb and utilize the tryptophan from our food very efficiently. And that means then that we get deficient in the production of serotonin and of melatonin. So what does that mean? Well, the melatonin part means our sleep is going to get pretty crappy for a lot of people.
Oh, bro.
And again,
the double-edged sword of that as well is, just to like jump in, I promise I'll be like 20 seconds.
No.
The other part is, like, when you're feeling sick, like when you have the flu or you have COVID, or, you know, like most people have like two buttons. It's like on or off. And whenever they push the off button and, you know, they're off work or they're off school or whatever they're doing, it's like, let me watch Netflix, let me eat really crappy food, and let me kind of just binge my way through, you know, this short-term illness. And then the irony is, we probably are not consuming as much tryptophan as we should be, you know, because we're not having the super elite deluxe, like, personal fitness style meals, because we're like, yeah, I'm just going to watch Friends and eat chips all day. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword, just like you're suggesting. We don't utilize the tryptophan that we're getting, and we're not getting as much. So can I give a little pro tip here with a medical disclaimer? Okay. Pro tip. Here's the medical disclaimer. I'm not giving medical advice. Please consult with your own healthcare professional before you make any changes to your diet, to your supplement regimen, or anything else of importance in your life.
I feel like this is the moment I've just become a real professional podcaster. I've never had to have a disclaimer on a show. This is the real deal. Let's go.
fasten your seatbelt. Okay, so here's the pro tip. There is a supercharged version of tryptophan that is more or less ready for your brain to just start using. It'll cross right into your brain from your bloodstream. It's called
heroin.
How did I not think of that? That's pretty good. It's called 5-HTP. 5-HTP. And you can get it as an over-the-counter supplement. I want to issue another caution, which is to say, here in the States and in much of the world, supplements are not very well regulated. And so they can, if you don't have a very high quality supplement from a trusted manufacturer, you can get impurities, you may not be getting the dose you signed up for. The best research that I've seen suggests 200 to 400 milligrams of 5-HTP can be incredibly helpful for sleep, especially when taken kind of close to bedtime. But make sure you get a really high quality supplement. There are some great resources online. There's one called consumerlabs.com that does in-depth lab-based evaluations of different manufacturers. So you can take a look at sites like that and find out who's making really high quality product that gets inspected. And I would, if it were me, I would not hesitate to take 5-HTP. But that's just a nice little hack that even if you're not absorbing tryptophan through your gut because of an active COVID infection, this is something that can deliver that tryptophan to your brain in a way that will keep your stores of serotonin and melatonin topped off.
That's really, really interesting. And like, you know me, like I'm an unbelievably simple guy. And when we start getting into the world of supplements, you know, and we know them, like there are people that take like hundreds of supplements every day. I like to take the absolute bare minimum. But the thought of having like some 5-HTP, like ready to go for whenever there is a sickness or there is kind of like a short-term issue, I feel totally, I could see myself kind of like implementing that into almost like my survival strategy. So yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah. So the other supplement you and I've talked about that I want to put on the radar for our listeners, because there is a powerfully anti-inflammatory supplement that we can take, and we can also get it from food sources, but it's harder. And what I'm referring to are omega-3 fats that come
the holy grail
most readily from fish oil, but there are other sources as well. And Hugh and I are going to have an episode sometime in the near future. We really take the deep dive on this stuff because there's just so much there. So we're just going to give a little tip of the iceberg set of tips today. But omega-3s, such as we can get in a fish oil supplement, they have a really nice anti-inflammatory benefit. And my suspicion is that they may prove to have some real clinical utility, some real benefit for people that have the inflammatory components of a COVID response, including potentially long COVID. Now, that's just a conjecture, but we absolutely know, and we have very strong evidence, that fish oil supplements and related omega-3 supplements have a rather surprisingly large clinical benefit for the average person fighting depressive illness. So they're, I think, really still underutilized, even though a lot of people have heard about them.
Yeah, it's one of the things, you know, like I said, I was south of Ireland last week for a holiday. I forgot my omega-3s. I didn't pack them. And it was like immediately when we crossed the border, I just went to a pharmacy and I picked something up because I was like, this is an important part of my arsenal that I can't get away from. And really interestingly, I didn't know this, and this is for another time, I guess, but on the back of the fish oil packet, it was like a big brand that I don't usually buy, but they recommended a dose just for everyday use. And then they also recommended like a high dose for people who have high blood pressure. And I was like, dude, is there anything that omega-3 cannot do? I was just so amazed. But a quick shout out though, like we mentioned it at the very, very start of the episode, like a great kind of takeaway or a great jumping off point, I guess, is if you haven't read it already, you got to read The Depression Cure. It's a short book. It's an easy read, and it's a really great kind of place to go through a lot of the preventative strategies that we've already kind of mentioned, but in detail. And it's very, very consumable. That's why I love recommending the book to people, is because if you wanted to and were so inclined, you could sit down and you could read the whole thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. By the way, my publisher's going to hate me for saying, well, hate is pretty strong. My publisher's not going to be happy with me for saying this, but if you type my last name in the YouTube search window, there's a lot of free content that comes up that, you know, because the other thing that I found again is that, I mean, I've been contacted by a whole lot of folks that have never read my book, but they've encountered a lot of the content just on YouTube and have been able to put it into practice just based on what I've given there. And so, you know, I will tell you, none of it's monetized. I don't have any conflict of interest. I just want to get the word out to people. So if that's a better way for you to get the content, then you might want to explore that as well.
Cool. And along with the photo of my broken nose, I'll also put a link to your kind of like big TED Talk, the multi-million view TED Talk. That'll also be up there. And it's just a great jumping off point crash course into depression itself. And the things that you go into in detail in the book are kind of laid out there in a very snackable way as well. So I really appreciate that.
Did you say snackable?
I said snackable. Yeah, I did. Who knew that academia now, could be so snackable, eh?
Well, you know, I would say, if I were a Freudian, I would say your Freudian slip is showing here, because what the audience doesn't know is that it's past Hugh's dinner time.
Bro, I'm looking at my chicken right in front of me right now. It's been calling my name the last 10 minutes. I'm like,
I'm still kind of blown away by the fact that we're doing this episode as if you are like literally in the next room, but you are literally like 5,000 miles away.
I go into such a weird place in my brain, like, because we usually talk audio only, and I feel like now I'm an audio guy and I'm an Audible learner. It's the double whammy. But like, it feels like, and sometimes I close my eyes when I talk and I do these kind of like remote interviews, like the connection feels just as strong as it could be in any other place, you know. Like, you do miss the face-to-face interaction, like you said, but like, it's amazing what can be done with a trusty microphone and a set of headphones, you know. It's really crazy.
It's really incredible. Okay, so listen, I see one more point on our to-do list. We could save it or we could do it. You see it? Number three, what can we do? Raise awareness with people in our lives that depression is a risk factor. This is kind of crazy, but so the causal arrow, the arrow of connection, goes in both directions. And what that means is, yes, COVID infection dramatically raises the risk of depression, but get this, depression raises the risk of getting a severe COVID infection. That's right. Now, I don't know if we want to, we could save that for a later episode, but I don't want to freak people out, because I mean, my God, if somebody's battling depression, the last thing they need to be thinking about is like, oh, wait, what? My depression makes me more vulnerable. The bottom line is that depression is usually characterized by inflammation. So that disruption of normal immune function, and that can then make the body have more difficulty in snuffing out the COVID virus really quickly. So that's probably most of what's going on there. It may also be the case that while we're depressed, we don't have quite as much mental bandwidth for being quite as careful, quite as wise about putting ourselves in situations where we're not going to face the highest level of risk.
Yeah. But, and then even just anecdotally, like speaking from experience, there's also just the reality that like when you're depressed, you don't feel like taking care of yourself. So all the stuff that you could do to kind of, you know, power your way through the infection and like the things that are inside your control are usually things that you will let slip as well. So yeah, it's just kind of a callback to the importance of maintaining your current practice of, you know, whatever that looks like in terms of what you do to keep yourself well, but also maybe bringing in a little bit of like social accountability in there to keep yourself on track. And, you know, like we all got to fall into our community sometimes. And, you know, there are times whenever we carry others in our lives and there's times whenever they carry us. And that's what
Absolutely.
Friendships and family and, you know, your tribe is for, I guess.
Oh, that's so well put. Yeah. And I just want to close with one last little nugget, which is depression will lie to you. Depression will put your brain and your mind in a state where pretty much you're only primed to be able to think negative things and to be able to perceive negative things and remember negative events. And so most people, while they're battling a full-blown episode of depression, are going to tell themselves and genuinely believe that really, you know, they're just going to be a bother. That, you know, you just talked about how the best of relationships are reciprocal, where we carry the other person, sometimes they carry us, we're there for each other in our moment of need. And depression will lie to you and say, no, there's no one there for you. You're just a burden. You're just going to bring people down. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to be there for you. And it's never going to get better. And what I need you to understand if you're listening to this today and you're in the middle of a depressive episode, is that that's the depression talking. And it is a lie that people in your life, if they were there for you and cared for you before you got depressed, they still care about you. And we all get to a point in life where we really genuinely need someone else to lean on. We're a very social species. We are never designed to go through this life self-sufficient completely, and certainly not alone. So just please make sure to keep in mind that if you're having those dark thoughts, if you're feeling hopeless, if you're feeling helpless, that you are not alone and that there are people out here who care about you.
Yeah, and just like really practically, like a useful litmus test that has really helped me, even in recent times, is just like, would you do it for them? And if you would, there's a really, really high chance that they wouldn't think twice about doing it for you. You know, we can get so caught up in our head of, oh, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to, add this heavy load to somebody. Whenever we are actively looking for ways to like love and serve the people that we care about in our lives, and as you mentioned earlier, most times we can't because we don't know what they need. So, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get sometimes. And speaking up is definitely one of the most important things you can do. Cool. So, look, I don't know the comfortable, smooth, really, really easy way to kind of end this episode other than like...
Nah, there's not.
This is it. Like, welcome to the first episode. This is mental health. Also, can you believe, like, I was interviewed on a really big podcast in Ireland last week, and I kind of like teased this show, and he turned around to me, he's a comedian, he goes, are you telling me that like nobody's launched a podcast before called Mental Health? And I was like, dude, believe it or not, like nobody has. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. I'm excited to go on this journey with you, Professor Dr. Steve Ilardi, but also you, the listener, whoever you are, wherever you are. Over the next couple of episodes, really looking forward to sharing more stuff with you. And we would genuinely love to hear from you. Like, there will be contact information and ways to kind of get in touch on the website, mentalhealth.fm. Even just like, hi, this is my name and this is where I'm listening from would be super beneficial at this stage, because we're experimenting with a lot of stuff. We've got 6 months just to see what this looks like and see how it progresses. And the more we can get to know what you want to hear from us, the better the show will be. So yeah, I know Steve and I would really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks. And I want to say, you know, Hugh, there's been a lot of fun and I'm just so excited. And by the way, I don't know if you believe in jinxing things. This is going to sound ridiculous coming from an alleged scientist, but dude, a little part of me just flinched when you said, oh yeah, there's no podcast called Mental Health. And I, as God is my witness, I now fully expect when this thing actually drops, when you, dear listener, are listening to this, you're going to be like, what the hell, man? I found 6 other pods called Mental Health something.
I don't know what, you know, anyway, January's right around the corner. It could be everyone's New Year's resolution to
really
launch a podcast called Mental Health. So
look, we'll
get there when we get there, bro.
That's all right. This should be the best one though. So
you got it, man.
That I'm going to hang my hat on that one.
Yeah. But look,
hey, it's been fun.
Thanks for your time. I actually had way more fun than I was supposed to. So thank you for the laughter as well as the serious golden nuggets as always. And I will touch base with you next week, man.
Next time. Peace out.
Class. It's so strange. I can't believe I'm doing another show. I said I would never do it. And yet here I am. The topic is just too close to my heart and something that I believe in too much to kind of let this opportunity slip. So yeah, look, it's a pilot episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. Would love to hear some feedback. Would love to hear some suggestions for future episodes. You can even submit questions that myself and Steve could have a go at answering. But the main thing here is if you want to hear more content like this, if you really enjoyed that episode and you'd like to kind of follow us along for the rest of the mental health journey, you can head over to the podcast channel for that. It's on every podcast app. And again, like I said at the top of the show, a wee subscribe would go a long way and a wee review would go even further. So yeah, look, thanks very much. Really appreciate your support as always. And I appreciate how encouraging people have been already. The select few who have listened to this episode before it goes out. And I am excited to embark on a bit of a new journey. So yeah, thanks very much. And catch you next week for the start of our new addiction series. Oh, is that actually going to happen next week? Either next week or the week after next week, sometime in February, we are rolling out our series on addiction that we've been working really hard on behind the scenes. And I'm so excited to share that with you. But I think I'll do a little teaser trailer for that before it all goes out. So keep an eye out for that as well. All right. Have a good one. And enjoy your rest of your day, whatever you get up to.